Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and I'm here today with Rich Furlato, who's director of pension investment policy for American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Rich has been on the active side of things with shareholders for many years, going way back to his time with ISS and probably even before that. I don't know Rich's full bio, but I've known him for many years. He participated in our 2003 webcast just when shareholder access was proposed, and he's been on the road this proxy season, as he is every year, on behalf of AFSCME, shepherding through the proposals. This year they've had roughly two dozen, and I'll first ask Rich to talk about how his proposals have fared so far this season.
Sure, Brock. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me on. We've had a very successful season this year, probably the most successful in a number of years. As a corporate governance activist fund, the AFSCME Employees Pension Plan has promoted two themes this year. The first is executive pay and ways of moderating that, and the second is board accountability. On the board accountability front, we've been very successful. We've submitted six proposals to declassify boards. Five of them were settled, and the one that went to a vote got a majority of the votes cast. It now turns out that there are more companies with declassified boards than classified boards, so I think the trend is well on the way for annual elections. On the issue of executive pay, our major emphasis has been pay for performance, and again, linked with the accountability issue that we've talked about, is looking at ways that shareholders can have greater voice on the whole issue of executive compensation. And in that regard, we have a new proposal that was the first time out, at least in the U.S., and that is we went over to the U.K., and we wanted to determine what have shareholders used most successfully for moderating pay in that market. And we found that it's actually the ability for shareholders to cast an advisory vote on the CEO's compensation package, or in the UK, their remuneration report. And we've submitted that as a shareholder proposal. It was filed first time out at U.S. Bancorp, where we got over 40% of the vote, unheard of for a first-time proposal. Second time we were up at Merrill Lynch, we got over 35% of the vote. And as we'll talk about a little bit later, we had this proposal up at Home Depot because of the pay practices generously overcompensating Nardelli, the CEO there. But the board refused to give us an answer, at least let us know how well we fared there. So we're very excited about that proposal, and I think eventually we will be winning majority votes over there. Generally, when it comes to executive pay, we've had excellent engagement with most boards, barring the exceptions like Home Depot. We've been well engaged with Time Warner, with Bristol-Myers Squibb, for example, where we've put pay-for-performance benchmarks in place. We're also very successful with shareholder resolutions. For example, we won a severance cap shareholder proposal at Emerson Electric with 59% of the vote. We also won a vote, a majority vote, requiring performance vesting of restricted stock over at J.P. Morgan Chase. We had an interesting conversation with Jamie Dimon, who was shocked that we did as well as we did with that proposal at his company. So on the whole, I think we've had strong engagement, generally constructive with boards. Our focus is on board accountability. I guess the two other issues I should mention is when it comes to majority voting, we want to put an end to the debate between whether plurality plus is the correct standard to be used. That is the director resignation policy formulation of majority voting, or a majority voting standard. So we filed a battery of shareholder proposals that would have that are binding, that is binding bylaw amendments. And we've done very, very well there at home at Honeywell. We got 49.5% of the vote, just short of winning that one. and more recently at Quest, we got 53% of those voting, but we didn't reach the bar for 50% of outstanding, which would be required for that amendment to have passed and to be put into effect. So it's been quite an effective season. We're excited by it, and we look forward to next season, where I think we're going to consolidate some of our moves forward.
And I should point out to members out there that, you know, your proposal on shareholder, you know, approval of compensation disclosure server was a precursor to what Barney Frank and the House Democrats have put forth as proposed legislation, and I guess SEC Commissioner Campos has sort of weighed in and agreed with the idea. I'm actually blogging about that today, and so it's interesting to see how that development, you know, follows what was happening in the UK. Have there been any other surprises for you this proxy season that you didn't expect, either, I guess, positive or negative?
Well, I guess the biggest surprise we had was the reception we got at the Home Depot meeting. We know that the Home Depot board was entrenched, was somewhat calcified, that had a series of interlocks and overlapping directorates that make it sort of the poster child for a board that was looking to protect itself from shareholders. And we even arrived at the company with a big chicken because we were afraid we wanted to identify the company as being too chicken to talk to its shareholders about CEO pay. But given all of that, we never expected that the board would run the most outrageous meeting that I've ever been at in my 20 years as a shareholder advocate. The board, first of all, the CEO, Bob Nardelli, was the only one who showed up at the meeting. No member of the board showed up. Nardelli did not give a state of the company report or any type of report to shareholders as the CEO. They moved directly into the votes on the director again, but there was no directors there. Time was limited to 3 minutes by a big digital clock that sat next to Nardelli, and once time had run down on a shareholder, the mics were turned off. And there was no Q&A session, and then ultimately there was no report to the shareholders on what the vote outcomes were. I mean, the level of contempt there was great. I'm not sure what the company was trying to prove, but in a short 30 minutes or so, I think they've really made themselves the target for the activist community for the balance of this year and certainly for next.
It sort of sounds like the poster child of poor governance, and I agree. It's sort of like how not to run a meeting.
No, that's exactly right.
So looking ahead, what do you, you know, I know you still have some meetings yet to attend in the next week or so. Can you get a sense of what issues that you think that AskMe will continue to focus on and then perhaps some new ones?
Well, board accountability and executive pay will really be the focus into the future. What you might be interested in knowing is that we continue to litigate the proxy access question through the courts, and we're in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals right now, maybe a few weeks longer, where we have litigated at AIG to prove the point that shareholders should have right to ballot access to at least ask the question about access. And our problem is that the SEC has no actioned that for the past 3.5 years, where we've tried to put the question of proxy access on a shareholder ballot. I think we've got a good chance of winning that, and I think if we do win that, it will change the complexion of what type of proposals we submit next year.
Great. Well, maybe we'll touch base with you in the fall and see what exactly you're planning.
Great.
Thanks for your time, Rich.
Sure. Thanks.